Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Now on UK Health Radio, treat yourself to an upgrade. Pack away your low self-esteem. Leave behind that empty feeling. Stow your fears and doubts in the overhead locker. And go from stress to authentic success with Danielle Sachs.
Hello, and here we are again. A new day, a new week, and of course, a new show. And when I heard my daughter, who is about 34 years old, a mother of two young children of 5 and almost 2, having a husband, a household to take care of, and an amazing career, doing really a great job in what she's doing, marketing manager at a high level. When I talked to her this morning, I thought, well, we need to talk about the stress in the workspace, meaning our occupational health. And of course, the stress in the workspace has all to do with work-life balance, with how the stress in our private life is affecting our working professional life, and the opposite with the how our professional life is influencing our personal life. That is all about work-life balance. And today, not for nothing, that's how the universe works. I am just talking in an interview that I planned a few weeks back to Claire Price. Now, Claire, I have to say, she has more than 30-year experience, a little bit like me. She's a mental health nurse by background, but also an accredited cognitive behavior therapist, a lecturer on the, you know, at the University of Hull. And she worked for a long time already in mental health, but she's experienced mostly in private sector organizations in a wide range of clinical, operational, and strategic roles. So she's also responsible for OneBright's internal clinical team. So I am sure that she's a person that we can talk about everything that has to do with occupational health, with stress awareness on the working, in the working space, with the signs and the symptoms on what and how can we recognize our stress and what to do with it. So I'm really looking forward to this, as we haven't talked too much about the stress in the workplace, and we cannot ignore. I see it in my practice every week, like I talked about my daughter, how really challenging it is. I'm not going to say it's difficult. I'm going to call it challenging to actually find that balance in life, to actually really be a whole day in that pressure field of being available 24 hours, the pressure on our deadlines, how the, on the screens, how everything in the working space is now really demanding and even depleting. So I'm sure we'll talk with Claire Price about this. And I can't wait to see what she has to say on this topic about all about stress in the workspace. Talk to you just now.
Radio.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back. And as I said in the intro, I am so, so excited to talk to you today about a subject that we haven't really addressed so much in this show, and that is stress in the working place. I'm talking to Claire. Welcome, Claire.
Oh, it's really great to be here, Danielle, and I'm really looking forward to explore this topic and give your listeners a little bit more information.
Thank you, because you know, you are experienced, I believe, more than 30 years already in what you do, and I really admire that, because it is such a difficult subject. Stress has become, the last three decades, you and I have been so many decades in this, it has become something different, something special, something so overwhelming for a lot of people, while it doesn't have to be. Is that correct?
It's absolutely right. I think, you know, as our lives get busier and busier and we're in this constant flux of change with pressures that are both external and internal, then stress has become something that's much more talked about and much more evident. And mental health in itself has become something that people are more able to talk about. So these conversations come up much more regularly. And, you know, we've moved forward significantly in our understanding around mental health and how stress can impact our mental health and our well-being. And definitely in the workplace, this is something that wouldn't have been really discussed in huge detail, you know, when I started out in mental health. But now they're conversations that we have all of the time.
Yes, I agree. And a lot of companies realize that they need to do things about this to keep the well-being of their working people really up to date, because otherwise it's costing them a lot of money. And not just that, I think it's actually detrimental for their private lives as well, not just in the working place. So can you just give me a little bit of info on what do you think that stress is? How would you define stress in the working space?
I think, you know, stress is one of those things that happens to us when the demands that are placed upon us are significant, but we don't feel like we've got the resources to meet them. So they can be both internal or external resources. So it might be, I don't have the right training or the right level of expertise, or I'm maybe not very confident in something. Or it could be an external demand. So an external resource would be something like, I don't have the right tools, I don't have the right team size, I don't have other things available in my environment. So when our stress goes up is when our resources don't match our demands, so they get imbalanced. So it's a little bit like a stress seesaw, is how I like to see it. So in my mind, I'd imagine a seesaw, and on one side I've got boxes that are my resources, and on the other I'd have boxes that are my demands, and if they're in nice balance, I can carry on and I can do things. And when things get slightly out of kilter, then one of the things that happens there is I can often see an end to it. So I can get through when I can kind of tell myself it'll be fine. There are things that I'll be able to do and it'll come to an end. But when that stress seesaw really starts to tip
And be chronical.
And it can become, definitely it moves from stress to distress. Mm. And then that distress can become more chronic because you can't see an end to it. So I kind of see stress in that way. It's a little bit like, as I say, a seesaw of demands versus resources and how you manage that.
Mm. And how does that play in the working place? So can you give me like an example on?
Oh, absolutely. And I think lots of people have been of this scenario. You know, you start off a project in work, you have a defined number of people and a defined time frame to do something. And you set your plan and you get going, and then somebody goes off sick, and then somebody gets taken away from your team because there's a shortage in a different place. You're two staff members down. Nobody's taking any notice of the fact that actually you've still got a deadline. The deadline doesn't get moved and the workload doesn't get shifted. So actually what happens as a result of that is that your stress levels go up because your demands and your resources are no longer balanced where they need to be. So I think, you know, there's lots of things that people can consider in terms of how to manage that in the workplace. So, you know, you think about, you know, what is your employee's job role or their task? Have they got the right skills and resources to be able to do that?
So am I hearing you saying that we need to ask ourselves questions?
I think so. I mean, it's
because that's an important part of stress management is asking the right questions.
It is. And also, it's as a CBT therapist, we ask people questions all of the time. It's part of our discovery. It's called guided discovery in CBT, and it's called Socratic dialogue. But essentially, it's a set of questions that helps people to uncover information that helps them to manage a situation better.
Yes.
That's essentially what it is. It's it's not fancy. It sounds fancy, but it's not that fancy. And actually, that set of questions can help you to really think about, you know, do we need to then change the timeframes? Do we need to think about bringing in additional resource? Do we think about, does the plan need to change or be adjusted slightly? So there are lots of things that you can then do to adapt to the stress.
Can we go back to the questions? Because I interrupted you, but I just wanted to make it clear for the, you know, for the listener, you know, out there who is now recognizing, ooh, I have that disbalance in demand and resources. So can you just give us a few questions that are interesting for me, for example, to ask myself in my business?
Absolutely. So I think if you're trying to identify stresses, so that's the things that make you stressed, so stress is the thing that triggers the stress within you. Things like, what is it that's actually making me stressed here? Where am I when I'm feeling stressed? What am I doing? Who am I with? What helpful changes could I actually make that would reduce the stress? What are the things that are within my control? So there's also this idea of, you know, you can only change the things that you can change.
Yes.
You can't actively influence the things that are outside of your control. So, for instance, you know, there may be a deadline that's a deadline because it's immovable. So, for instance, I work in the insurance industry with insurers. There is a time when people's policies renew. So anything that's put into the policy has to be in the policy by that renewal date. It is not a movable feat. So that would be one thing that couldn't change. So
yes.
I'd have to hit my target. So what's in my control might be how I get there. So what do I need to change in order to meet that and get to that point in time? So you can ask yourself these questions.
What about, can I just ask you, because I find this so intriguing. What about if who is your trigger, like we said, just that question, and it's, for example, your boss?
Yeah, I mean, that can be really difficult, can't it? And I absolutely understand, you know, relationships and interpersonal relationships can be incredibly stressful. Even for the people that we like and we love, there's still stresses that goes into that. So, you know, I think it's really important to think about that in a working relationship and in a relationship where somebody is your boss. I think sometimes it's helpful to think about, how can I have a conversation? When you're having conversations with a boss, it's sometimes helpful to try to take the emotion out.
Yes.
And to sit down and think about, what is it that I actually want them to know? And what is it that I'm actually trying to say? So sort of trying to conceptualize something or think about it in advance. What is it that I'm finding difficult? Is it the way that I'm spoken to? Is it the way that You know, the emails coming to me? Yes. Is it the pace of the work? Is it that I don't understand some of the things that I'm being asked to do?
And then it's also an opportunity of learning, I found. It is. Because, you know, when I have clients here, you know, and whether it's their boss or whether it's a coworker or that they work together all the time, it is really, I think it's an important question to ask yourself, because it can be your teacher. That yes. person can be just teaching you something about you within you that is going on. And that's why they trigger you. But it's all about your own needs and values. And absolutely. So it's quite an interesting, I found, journey to go within when you know which people are triggering you.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really interesting that you mentioned things like values and things there, because often emotions are something that we experience when our values are compromised, yes. or they're not quite yes. matched in the yes. same way. And yes. then that creates something within us that sort of triggers us. Mm. And we respond to those triggers. And sometimes it's helpful to step back and understand what yes. is it about that. And then you can have conversations about either can it be moderated in mm-hmm. some way? So can there be something that we do differently, mm-hmm. or can we adjust something, or can we think about doing it differently? Or actually, there is an element for me that's around learning tolerance. And, you know, sometimes we do have to understand that our relationships with people, other people have their way of doing things, and it might not be our way of doing things. So there is that kind of, you know, place where people come together, and it's not very synthesized. It's not very together. But actually, that it doesn't mean that it's the right or wrong way. Mm. So there's sometimes, like, you can't shortcut people's learning. You can go on the same journey and reach the same destination, but you can equally go on a different journey, but still reach the same destination. Mm. So learning to be a bit tolerant and thinking about, you know, okay, I find this quite difficult, but what are all of the other things that I really like about this person, this job, this role, this company? And then focusing on those things can help us to tolerate the things that maybe are a bit more difficult. Because let's be fair, most people don't get to choose their boss.
I agree. And so I love the quote that says, do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? Sometimes it's about that kind of basic question of letting everybody live in their own world, in their own movie, you know, because we all are living in our own movie. And so it's quite interesting. So can you give me a little bit signs or symptoms that you would say in the working place for anybody listening today, and say, you know, what about the signs and the symptoms?
Absolutely. So often the signs and symptoms of stress are similar to other mental health conditions. So there can be a crossover. But often I think it's important to notice when we're stressed, these symptoms tend to be more transient. So they kind of come and go. They don't tend to be around for significant periods of time, because that's when things move into a mental health problem. But
yes.
people will find themselves often with maybe feeling more irritable, maybe mm-hmm. more bad-tempered, a bit more impatient. So if you think about that in the workplace, that might be that people then, you know, struggle with their relationships a bit more. They're a bit more snappy with people.
Yes.
You know, you might see them maybe not taking feedback in the way that they would ordinarily, and feeling a bit more criticized by that. So you would see those types of things. There are things that in the workplace you wouldn't see, so you'd have to have questions about them. So, you know, what's running through your mind? But you might pick up things like people saying things like, oh, do you know what? I can't cope with this. Or, oh, there's just too much to do around here and not enough time. Or maybe this isn't fair. So you get a lot of fairness coming through when people are struggling with stress. People should be helping me more. I'll never get this finished. I have to get this done. So there's like internal pressure as well.
Yeah, I agree.
And then you might notice physical sensations are more difficult, thinking about that. But you might notice, you know, that somebody gets a little bit shaky. You might notice changes in their voice. You know, if they're in a group situation, you might notice that somebody goes a bit pale. But I think it's the behaviours. Often the behaviours are the things in the workplace that you can pick up on with either your colleagues or, you know, people that you might be responsible for if you're a leader, for instance, or a mentor or a manager, boss. Mm. And they're things like maybe isolating yourself from others,
yes,
not being able to get your work done on time. You might be seeking more reassurance than you would ordinarily. You know, you might need things written down for you because your concentration's
no
a little
focus
bit
anymore. Yeah, the concentration
so focus
and focus
and concentration can go. You know, so it's more about behaviors. You might notice people being more snappy with their colleagues. So they'd be the key things to sort of pick out. And I'd also think about, because some people are just irritable, that's the way the world is, but I would say it's when people have a change. So if you notice a change in somebody, that can be a really good clue to start to think about, you know, are they okay? Are they feeling a bit stressed? Mm. Is this the opening for a conversation that can have? Because maybe they're not quite their usual self, mm. because I'm not good on the word normal self because I'm not good on that, but usual for them in the relationship and in the environment. Is there something a little bit different or feels a little bit off? And that can be a really good sign, a really good clue and indicator that maybe.
But what about how do I recognize all those signals and symptoms in myself? Because isn't it that we, like you said in the beginning, you know, they come and go and we suppress them. We don't even listen. I was one of those who never listened to my signals until one day my body said, stop. Thank you very much. I'm not going on anymore. So how can we recognize those things ourselves?
I think there's a couple of things. So if you notice that you maybe are not sleeping as well, you know, so very practical things, you're not sleeping as well, your diet's changed, you maybe turn into a glass of wine a little bit more frequently on a night, you know, and those types of things would be sort of key clues for yourself, but also being open to feedback from others. So, for instance, you know, my husband will go, oh, you're a little bit more snappy than a bit snippy today. And I think, oh, actually, I probably am. And it's because I'm doing X, Y and Z and I'm feeling a bit under pressure and you're interrupting me and I haven't got time for you to interrupt me. Mm. So, you know, those things happen. So being open to that feedback, and as you said, it's hard, isn't it? People tell you, so it's hard to be open to that, but actually stepping back and going, oh, do you know what, a couple of people have mentioned that, what's going on for me, and actually taking that and being open to it can be really helpful.
Can we be a bit more personal here then, because you are talking about your husband and yourself. what is happening in your life that is stressing you? What are your triggers and what is stress for you in your own personal life?
So I think there's all sorts of things. I think there's the normal things that we all have. You know, you get up on a morning, you're late for work, the cat's in the way, you trip over the cat, you get into the car doesn't start, somebody's parked.
One of those days.
You know, there's that stuff, which I think is general stuff and general stress. But by the time I get to work, my stress cup is already half full. So by the time somebody then adds another couple of things, it's overflowed, you know, it's overflown and it can feel a little bit overwhelming. So I think there's those day-to-day stresses, you know, they happen for all of us. And depending on what's happening and what you've got to do and how you perceive them will impact you and you will have a response to that. And that might be, you know, shouting at another driver, beeping your horn, whatever that might be. But I think there's then the other stresses that people have. You know, we have interpersonal relationships all of the time with lots of different people. You know, I've been married I've been with my husband nearly 30 years. You know, our relationship ebbs and flows. There's times when we like each other more than we than we do at other times. And that's around organisation of family life, of work life. My son is 19. He's at university studying maths, but he was recently diagnosed with autistic spectrum disorder.
Wow.
You know, he's been incredibly lucky through his schooling because the structure has supported him. Moved to university as a straight A student, flunked his first year.
So and how do you combine all that, you know, because we're talking about stress in the working place. So how, when you have those personal challenges in your life, and you come to work and you actually work in stress already. I mean, that in itself already. So how do you do it for yourself? What is your way of stress management?
I think what I would say is that I try to think about things as a moment in time. So everything in my life is a moment in time, right? It will feel like this today. It will might feel like it tomorrow, but in 12 months' time, I'll look back and it won't feel like this at all. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that reflective process of being able to sort of look back at other times when I felt stressed and that those things may be impacting on, you know, my ability to be as present in the workplace mm-hmm. as I might want to be. And it might make me a little bit more irritable in the workplace that I want to be. I've also got quite high standards, so I have to try to manage that and think about like the interplays of those things. I think I use my support systems. So I've got mm-hmm. really great work colleagues. We create safe spaces for people to just a moment. You know, I've got people around me that we do that for each other. So, you know,
I think that is actually one basic thing that you're saying there, Claire, because in the workplace, and I trust that that is what companies are doing more and more, is creating a safe place for anybody working there that they can be vulnerable. Let's talk it, you know, let's say it like that. That can be open and honest and vulnerable about what is going on, because 20 years ago, 30 years ago, there was no way at all that you could express yourself like that in the working place, isn't it? So that safe place is so important.
And absolutely. And often people might not have that safe space if they've got interpersonal difficulties. But I think there are things that organizations can do to help that. Mm. So, you know, things like mental health champions or mental health first aiders, where you can reach out, have conversation if you need to. You know, organizations have got employee assistance programs. I think they're underutilized and people really still struggle with the idea that there's confidentiality. Mm. But think about all of life's stressors. For me, an employee assistance program is about all of life's problems. So yes. They will talk to you about if you've got financial problems. They will talk to you if you've got caring responsibilities.
Okay. Talk
to you if you've got workload issues. They'll, you know, there's all of that. It doesn't just have to be about, you know, a very
work and about the work. 9 to 5. Yeah,
exactly.
I agree, because we are human, we are whole, and so you cannot, is that what you say, you cannot actually take apart the work from the person's life.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting thing, because we have done some studies, and I'm not going to be scientific at all, but we have done some basic studies around when people have absence from work or they're struggling in work, what is it that's causing that? And actually, only in about 10% of cases is there an actual direct work causal factor.
Wow.
So most times, and when we've done our studies within our organisation, we have found that 90% of it will be either external stressors that are impacting my ability to work, or just external stressors themselves, you know, bereavements, all sorts of things that go there. But generally, you know, stress happens. And if your concentration is altered, for instance, if you're struggling mm-hmm. to make decisions, if you're feeling a bit vulnerable and you're upset more, then imagine how that might impact somebody's ability to do their job. So there, it's very difficult to segregate these things out, but it is helpful for people to understand that, you know, to help them to cope with things is about, you know, where your focus is. So I am a big believer that, you know, if I'm feeling really stressed about something outside of work and it's impacting my ability in work, then actually the focus that I give a task might actually break me free from those kind of concerns and worries for a little while. And that can be really helpful and really healthy.
Yes.
I think if the time when it's unhelpful is maybe you're using your work to avoid those things, and actually you're working massive hours, You know, you're doing various things that are stopping you from going home and maybe managing those relationships. So you can get into work patterns. And often people don't kind of point that out, do they? You know, John, he sat at his desk. Do you know, he gets in at 7 o'clock every morning and he doesn't go home till 8 o'clock every night. He's so dedicated. Is he? Is he struggling? Is there something at home? Is he stressed? Is he avoiding? You know, there's lots of questions that that would bring up for me. That's about, is it what it seems?
Because what is this work-life balance?
Yes.
If that is out of balance, then...
And work-life balance also changes for everybody. So I think we need to be really careful about that. And it changes throughout your periods of your life. So when I was a young mum, then I would want to spend less time at work and maybe more time with my family, because that's where where my values were, and that's what was important to me. And then as Ethan grew up and got a bit older and went to school, then actually my work-life balance changed and I took on more hours.
Yes.
And then you go beyond that and now he's left and my husband works and I work, and actually my work-life balance has changed again.
Again.
And then I'm pretty sure that as I hit the sort of twilight years of my life, that my work-life balance will change and shift again. And I'm maybe wanting to do more leisure activities and spend more time, you know, with my husband and doing various things. So I think it, you know, it shifts and changes. So I think it's really important as well not to put your own view of what a good work-life balance is. But generally ask questions to extrapolate for somebody. Is this working for you? You know, are you having time to do the things that you value in your life? If work is something that you heavily value, then you're not going to, you're going to be stressed if somebody takes it away. So there's that, you know, there's those things as well to consider, which I think is really interesting, and that often aren't considered in that way, because people often think they know best about work-life balance.
Yeah, that's why I insist so much when we talked about asking questions, because we think we know it from our perspective, from our movie. You know, we are sitting in the movie house and watching our own movie, and we do not often enough ask questions about their movie. That's a little bit what you're saying here, which I really enjoy, because it's the same in any practice. And you, as a therapist, you know, it is so important to go into the perspective of the other person, whether you call that also empathy, being present in their world, compassion. But it is so important, because that's when the other person will open up and will start to reflect in themselves. Oh, yeah, maybe that question. Oh, yeah, that answer. So it is so important to ask these questions. So thank you for that. Is there a first step, a basic advice that you would give someone? Imagine somebody's listening now, feeling in their work that there's so much pressure, that they are in overdrive, overwhelm, being in the rat race, let's say, you know, feeling a bit trapped in the rat race, not having that work-life balance. What would be your first advice that you would give them in their stress management?
So I think I'd be looking at speaking to somebody about, you know, what is it that is maybe creating that for them, and just thinking a little bit to themselves, are there things here that I can delegate, give away? Is it being driven by myself, or is it being driven from outside of myself? So there's the internal versus the external drive, drivers here. And then I'd be thinking about, once I understood that, is actively the first step is to reach out and to try to have a conversation. But that can feel incredibly overwhelming.
That can be 10 steps in one.
It can. But I think there's ways to break that down. So the first thing is just reaching out and saying, I was wondering if you had time for a conversation, right? That's it. And then somebody will come back and say yes or no or whatever. And then you can take the next step, which might be then breaking it down into, well, I wondered when you might be available. And then, you know, you're breaking it down into smaller steps, and those steps then feel more manageable. But I think it's important that we understand what a conversation brings, because people think, and I've had this conversation numerous times, why don't they just know? And I have the conversation that people cannot know things by osmosis.
Yes, I agree.
Right?
They expect others to know how they feel.
Yes, without telling them. So there's this osmosis that goes on that because you feel it, the other person should pick it up and it should just be obvious. Mm. And while some things are more obvious, if you look for signs and clues, other times it's not. And we know that people mask their symptoms, they mask their distress and their stress because they think that they're going to be negatively perceived by others, right? So there's that whole, they're going to think that I can't cope, I can't do my job. And they might have watched somebody reach out for support previously and not get it.
I agree.
So these are all barriers. So I think what I would say is, you know, we've moved forward a massive amount.
Yes.
It is a brave thing to do, but break it down into little steps and then think about if you are going to have a meeting, what is it that you want to say? And then on the other side, I'd think about giving any person an opportunity to say something. Mm. And you don't need to solve the problem.
Yes, I agree. That's a big one also, hey?
Yeah, it's not for you to always be the solver of the problem. Mm. But if you think about why people are in management positions, it's often because they are problem solvers. And so they think that everything has a solution when sometimes the solution is just to listen.
Yes, I agree.
And that can be as poignant for somebody and actually as important as any other type of intervention, just listening, just hearing somebody say something and then responding and validating their feelings. Mm. And that doesn't mean saying, you know, I've heard many things over the years. Oh, yes, I know somebody who's felt like that and they got through it. It was fine. That is not validation. Mm. It is saying, do you know what? I can hear what you're saying. That must feel really difficult for you at the moment.
And that's it.
That's it. That's it. Just acknowledge what the feeling is and encourage people and also give people space and time. This is really difficult. And so it might be that somebody's a little bit silent. Don't feel the need to fill the space. Just allow them to have a moment to pull themselves together and to be able to talk to you and to be able to kind of just think about what it is that they want to say. So I think
I just ask you, apart from talking to someone in the working place that can just listen, when would you go for real help in the working place? When would you advise someone to really go for professional help?
As early as is possible. So I am a really big believer in early intervention, right? Stress causes distress. Distress can create a mental health difficulty. If we can get people to start talking about this early enough, then we prevent the distress from being lengthy. You know, and not everything will always work, but you know when you are feeling out of sorts, right? It's an out of you don't even have to give it a technical name. You're out of sorts, you're not quite yourself, something's going on. Have a conversation with somebody.
Yes.
Lots of organizations have the ability for an EAP for that conversation. You know, you can refer yourself into NHS services, talking therapies. You know, you can go and get private support with an organization like Wombra if that's what you wanted to do. But, you know, whatever and however you reach out, what I would say is distress is unpleasant. So if you are finding yourself in stress that is leading to distress, then have those conversations early because it's very likely that a very short intervention and a very sort of a lighter touch in many ways can resolve that for you. And actually you learn those skills and you take those skills into the next chapter of your life, or, you know, they're the skills that you learn on, they become your toolkit that you can use on your journey.
Yes, I agree. A lot of my clients often say, if I had known what this program, this journey has done to me, if I had known that in advance, I would have done it 5 or 10 years earlier. First of all, I would pay double, triple the amount of money. And I would, because they also become, and I'm sure you can agree, Claire, I have 3 children and 4 grandchildren, but you become a better parent. You become a better human being. It's not just about stress in the working place. But that stress in the working place can make you a worse human being as well. So that's why it's so important to, like you say, to do the early intervening.
Yes.
And people think that it is still, I so often say that in my articles and in my speeches, people still think that it's a weakness to go for help. In God's name do people need to realize that it is not is luxury. It is not, it has nothing to do with being strong.
Yeah.
It is a necessity.
But there's a strength, isn't there? There is. And I think it's about changing the narrative.
Braveness,
changing,
like you said.
And changing the rhetoric. It's being brave. And there's a strength within acknowledging that you're struggling and then getting the relevant support or learning the skills that you need to enable you to do that. And I think whether you're stressed at work or outside of work, you know, the skills that you learn, you know, are cross-fertilized, you know, you use them in the other areas of your life.
So I agree.
Actually, they don't just stay with you in a very linear way. They move and they expand into all other areas of your life, and they do make you more able to manage things. You know, there is a thing that happens in therapy training. Lots of people you know, end up ending their relationships because they've gone through the therapy training and they're doing things differently
and realized that,
realizing various things. And it was one of the things that we were talked about when I first started doing my therapy training. And it's just a really interesting phenomenon that what you learn actually generalizes into other aspects of your life. And I think it's about helping people at all ages and understanding that, you know, talking's good. Talking's a really good thing. And getting help as early as you can is not a weakness. It's a strength. It's a brave thing to do. And actually, it will make your life, the quality of your life, so much better, because people bumble along, don't they, in that stress, distressed state. And actually, you could have had something that then made you much happier within yourself. Happiness, I think, is a weird thing, but satisfied, satisfied, have
fulfillment.
Value. Yes,
fulfillment is the only thing we have to, work for. Now, can I, because time goes by so quickly, Claire, and I'm really intrigued about everything we talk about here, but do you have a quote or a statement or something that you live by being the person who you are after 30 years experience? Is there something you can share with that person that is listening now that is maybe 20 years younger than us, maybe whatever, person who is a bit stuck and who is feeling really stressed, distressed, and maybe even thinking, I should go and get help? Is there something that you live by, a statement or a quote?
Yeah, I mean, I think I said earlier, for me, it's very much about that. This is a moment. It's a moment in time. And I need to, and if you need help now, get the help that you need. But there's no, you know, there isn't any second chances, right? There's no second chances. You can carry on feeling like you're not managing things. When actually you could make a definite and positive change, and that would make you feel so much more different in how you approach things. So I definitely think about those things, but I also live by the sort of, you know, grant me the wisdom to change, to it's sort of an acceptance statement, which is about, you know, the wisdom to see the things that I can't change and to only work on the things that I can, right? So banging my head against a wall to get my organization or to get somebody to do something, that's outward. That's about change that I can't maybe affect. So what are the things that I can change? And often they're the things that are within your sphere of control or around how you think, respond, react, what actions you can positively take. So I definitely think
thank you for that. I really appreciate that, because to me, and as a grandmother of four, if you ask me the advice that I would give to my 20-year-old one, is that whether it's time management, stress management, whatever it is that you need to manage in your life, it is about self-management.
Yes.
So that's a little bit what we've been talking about today. So thank you so much for this conversation. It was really, really interesting. And I'm going to have a little break and come back just now.
Thank you.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Here we are again with a little outro of this interview, because I just want to give you a little summary of what I believe has been really interesting in this conversation with Claire Price, who really you can feel that she's an experienced person when we talk about stress in the workspace. And she was explaining to us what stress is to her about the resources and the demand are in this balance. And of course, chronically, that gives the stress. And if you don't take care of the distress, it can give you a mental health disorder. So what she was saying to us is to help you uncover what is really going on in your life, on the workplace, with the colleagues, what is triggering you, we are supposed to ask more questions. It is important, as I do in my practice, because that's what people pay me for, is to really ask good questions, because that's where you can reflect. That's where you can understand the triggers. That's where you can understand where you go out of control, how your self-talk is actually really lying to you, and all these things. And it is indeed true that in the working space, I've had many examples here in my practice, we need to be to learn more tolerance. It is true that tolerance in the workspace is really one of the key elements if you want to have a great functional team. In a team, we need to have tolerance. She explained a few symptoms of stress, but what I got from it was that, and that's what I'm saying about a team, that's what I'm talking about well-being in any organization, is all about giving a safe space to people all around you, to people in the organization, to be able to be vulnerable, to open themselves. So that safe space is really, really important. Whether you are the safe space for one of your colleagues, that you offer a safe space, whether there is in the house someone you can go and talk to, it is all about going early enough for that help. Like she said, the first step is to go and reach out. And of course, it takes courage, but be brave enough, because as she was explaining to us, it's often that we expect others to know how we feel, but don't expect others to know. Go take little steps, be brave, and go what you want to say. You don't need neither to be the solution for your colleagues if they talk to you. You can just listen. The solution is often just in the empathy, in being present with the other person, in the pain, and just listen. It is just about empathy, about giving permission to be vulnerable. And I do think, whether it's in personal life, but certainly we can all learn from this in the workspace, to be more tolerant and to go and listen to what other people have to say. So that early intervention is really key, because from stress, as I said, comes the distress, and from the distress comes the mental health issue. And we all know that in all organizations and companies, it is mind-boggling how many people, how much percentage of the people working are really battling. So Claire gave us also an advice, a tip on how she does it. And she says that to her, it is really important to go in the moment, to go in the reflection and say to yourself, this is just a moment in time. It's not going to be important anymore, probably in a year's time or 5 years time. You know, it's important to go in the present, not being too much in your head in the future, but stay present, stay centered, get your focus back, whether you need to go in nature or just for a walk or go to the toilet for 2 minutes. But it is a good tip that any problem, any challenge we have, it can be just a moment in time. And so the wisdom to have to do something about what you can control and just to accept what you can't control is really the phrase to finish this show. So I trust that you had a little bit of insights on the stress in the working place and how to manage it. I'm going to leave you for now and I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
From Stress to Authentic Success was presented by Danielle Sachs. Join Danielle at the same time next week here on UK Health Radio. And meanwhile, for more on how to thrive in business and everyday life by being true to yourself, go to daniellesachs.com.